WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guest is screenwriter and director Paul Thomas Anderson. His movies are Heartache, Boogie Nights, and Magnolia. Now, you grew up in Studio City in the San Fernando Valley, and both Magnolia and Boogie Nights are set there. And you've said that, and I think it was in the New York Times Magazine, you said that for years you were ashamed of the fact that you grew up there. You were thinking that, you know, you weren't from the big city of New York or from the farm fields of Iowa, so therefore you had nothing to say. How did you get over that?
I think just time, I suppose, or time or desperation of wanting to write something and write what I know, you know. I'd gone to New York for a little while, and I'd been there, and I just felt so foreign to me. I couldn't get a grip there, and I think when I came back here, and I think, you know, what did help was seeing a movie on Shortcuts, you know, was seeing Shortcuts and seeing a movie about Los Angeles that looked like Los Angeles was kind of a nice thing. When someone helps to validate it for you, like Robert Altman, it becomes, you can start to look at yourself a little bit more.
Are there things you've come to think of as being the defining characteristics of the San Fernando Valley? Not the cliches, but what you think of as the defining characteristics?
Yeah, but I got to keep them to myself so I can make more movies.
Yeah, okay. you do your own coming attractions for your films. Why is that necessary?
I guess I just feel like it's part of my job. Is that, you know, people's first impression of the movie, I think they take to the movie. I don't think it starts and stops just with the movie itself, but it carries over into all of the things that we associate with the movie, and that means the poster, the commercials, the trailers as well, because you remember a lot of those just as much as you do the movie, I think.
So many coming attractions now give away the whole movie. You see the beginning, the middle, and the end, except that it's just a lot shorter than the movie is, and you think, why should I bother going?
It's true. It's true. It's funny because, you know, this time I studied a lot of trailers from way back when through today just to get a grip on the history of movie trailers, you know, and it's a fascinating thing. But I can see why they do it, because when you test these trailers in malls, you know, in Albuquerque, people will say, well, what's the movie about? They just want to know what the movie is about. First, they want to know who's in it. You know, who is in it and what is it about? And those are the two things. So it's interesting. I think, you know, maybe I had leeway to create a trailer that didn't exactly tell you what it was about because the cast was so strong. I think it created a leeway where I could kind of get away with not telling you what it was about. You know, look at the Shining trailer is one of the greatest trailers of all time. I don't know if you remember it or not.
I don't.
But it's very long. It's a single shot. There's no cuts in it. It's the elevators in the hotel. And the music's sort of building, and it's sort of letting you know, coming soon, a Stanley Kubrick production, Shelley Duvall, Jack Nicholson, who was at the height at that time. So instantly, you're like, it's the new Jack Nicholson movie. Great. And then blood begins to pour from the elevators, and just gallons and gallons and gallons of blood come gushing out of the elevators right into the lens, sort of wiping away all of the furniture, gets carried away in this wash of blood, and it wipes the screen red, and then it says The Shining, and that's the trailer. And it's just sublime and simple and enticing. It's totally something that you see and go, I want to see more. What the hell was that? You know, which I think great trailers could do. Great trailers could be great short films. You know, I think I would love to see more filmmakers tackle them themselves and take more control of that.
Give you a sense of the atmosphere of the film without telling you the whole story.
Exactly, exactly. And because at the end of the day, no one knows anything about marketing. You know, I mean, any marketing guy who tells you he knows that this will work is just out of his mind. Any of the great marketing people that I've sort of met say, oh, by the way, I know nothing. You know, I know some things that work, but the truth is we don't know anything. You know, every slam dunk that we thought we had turned out to be a stinker and vice versa. You know, it's always interesting. So it's great to hear people admit that.
Because you use music so well, I want to end with a music question. And this gets back to Boogie Nights. There's a kind of climactic scene in Boogie Nights where the two of the characters who we've come to really like a lot, you know, the Mark Wahlberg, Dirk Diggler character, mm-hmm. and the John C. Reilly character, Reed Rothschild, are trying to score some drugs from a character right. played by Alfred Molina, who turns out mm-hmm. to be totally drugged out of his mind and absolutely insane. And he's in his bathrobe, which is undone, and he's wearing these, like, I think, red tight underpants. Mm-hmm. And he's playing, like, his favorite mix of records for these guys while he's mm-hmm. absolutely terrorizing them. He's got this guy in the corner who's setting off firecrackers, and it sounds like gunshots, and they flinch like mad every time another firecracker goes off. And the record that the Alfred Molina character is playing is Jesse's Girl, mm-hmm. you know, a like pop hit from the 80s by Rick Springfield, who used to be on, what, General Hospital?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What a really interesting, inspired choice of records. What made you think of playing Jesse's Girl in the middle of this absolutely terrifying scene, this insane scene?
Well, I'll tell you, I guess that it's a song that reminded me of being just like, you know, 12 or 13 years old and rushing around and having your youth and your crushes on girls and things like that, and hearing that song and being able to apply it to it. And so there's that. And I think why it functions so well there is that it's the song that Mark Wahlberg should be listening to, having feeling, his character should be listening to that song, having crushes on girls at the mall, you know, thinking, oh gosh, this is the song that me and my girlfriend listened to. At that time in his life, that's where he should be. Instead, he's in this insane pseudo-drug deal, you know, with this maniac played by Alfred Molina, and it's just the complete opposite of where someone his age and of his heart should be. So to hear this kind of wonderful, just ditty pop song that's so kind of romantic and actually personal to me, I think that's why it works well. And also, too, you just, you know what, a lot of times it's just good if a song works, if it's just cool, you know, if the vibe just works, that's a good enough reason. So this is one I think that works that way and also works in this weird kind of personal gut, kind of romanticized way. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Oh, good.
Paul Thomas Anderson, I regret we're out of time. I look forward to your next movie, and thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Terry.
Paul Thomas Anderson wrote and directed Boogie Nights, Hard Eight, and the new movie Magnolia. Here's Jesse's Girl from the scene we were just talking about in Boogie Nights.
It's Cosmo. It's Chinese.
That's why life's letting out firecrackers, huh?
Jesse is a friend. Yeah, I know he's been a good friend of mine. But lately something's changed. It ain't hard to define. Jesse's got himself a girl, and I wanna make her mine. And she's watching in Willow's eyes. She's loving with the bite, I just know it. Ricky Springfield, the buddy of mine. You know what we said, Jesse's girl. I'm so jealous. I want to have Jesse's girl. Did you be with me? Ah, where can I have a woman like that? I'll play along with the charade.
You're leaving, man.
That doesn't seem to be a reason to change. You know, I feel so dirty when they start talking cute. I wanna tell her that I love her, but the point is probably moot. Cause she's watching him with those eyes, and she's loving him with that body, I just know it. And he's holding her in his arms late, late at night. You know, I wish that I had Jesse's girl.
A scene from Boogie Nights. Rock critic Ken Tucker has a review of Fiona Apple's new CD. She waited 3 years to follow up her 3 million copy-selling debut Title with this second effort. This new collection has a title that's 90 words long. Ken will recite it later.
I wouldn't know what to do with another chance if you gave it to me. I couldn't take the embrace of a real world. Much better off, better by far.
The way things are for Fiona Apple is that she's come up with the year's most annoying album title and some of the year's best music. The title is, When the Pawn Hits the Conflicts, He Thinks Like a King. What he knows throws the blows when he goes to the fight, and he'll win the whole thing, for he enters the ring. There's no body to batter when your mind is your might. So when you go solo, you hold your own hand, and remember that depth is the greatest of heights, and if you know where you stand, then you know where to land, and if you fall, it won't matter, because you'll know that you're right. That's it. When the Pawn is a remarkably assured collection of songs for a 22-year-old whose first album suggested talent, but not the ambition and range that's all over nearly every song here.
I let the beast in too soon. I don't know how to live without my hand on his throat. I fight him always and still. Oh, darling, it's so sweet. You think you know how crazy I am. You say you don't spook easy, you won't go, but I know, and I pray that you will.
Fiona Apple builds songs around the jazz and rock chordings of her piano playing. Her producer and essential collaborator, John Bryan, plays nearly everything else. Together, they create an airy, echoey atmosphere in which Apple's smoky voice wafts in and out of the melodies. The most remarked upon songs on her first album were the angry ones, in which she lashed out at people who'd hurt her. And there's no shortage of simmering rage here.
You wanna make me sick, you wanna lick my wounds, don't you, baby? You want the badge of honor when you save my hide. But you're the word in the way of the day of doom, baby. If you need my shame to reclaim your pride. When I think of it, my fingers turn to fists. I never did anything to you, man. No matter what I try, you beat me with your bitter lies. So call me crazy, hold me down, make me cry. Get off now, baby. It won't be long till you be lying there in your own hands. You feed the
If the idea behind her long album title is, as I read it, that you can be a pawn who wises up and, jujitsu-like, use your vulnerability as a weapon to defend yourself, that's certainly the strategy she deploys musically. If Apple were a less disciplined songwriter, her music would have the nattering aimlessness of the artist whose voice and phrasing most closely resembles hers, the late Laura Nyro. But at the mere age of 22, Apple is already revealing a compositional rigor that keeps her willful flights of lyrical fancy well-grounded. The result is sensual music that's an intellectual tickle as well.
I was staring at the sky, just looking for a star to pray on or wish on or something like that. I was having a sweet fix of a daydream of a boy whose reality I knew was a hopeless to be had. But then the dove of hope began its downward slope, and I believed for a moment that my chances were approaching to be grand. But as it came down near, so did a weary tear. I thought it was a bird, but it was just a paper bag. Hunger hurts.
On another song here, Fiona Apple sings, "If you want to make sense, what you looking at me for?" But it's clear from the music she's making here, and this goofily titled album coheres as a decidedly ungoofy, unified suite of songs, that her denial of common sense only suggests that she's crazy like a fox.
Ken Tucker is critic at large for Entertainment Weekly. Coming up, David Bianculli has a suggestion for CBS about what to do while David Letterman recovers from heart surgery. This is Fresh Air.